Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Todd Feinberg, now 2 till 6 on WTIC News Talk 1080.
WTIC Todd Feinberg here. Of course, this is my time. And one of the people I like to bring on to share it is Chris Powell from the Journal Inquirer and a columnist you're very systematized. I always admire people like you, Chris, who can just churn out columns. And you imagine people who can do that as maybe being endlessly just oozing ideas, but the other alternatives just being disciplined and building up the muscle that creates the habit of churning out columns when a certain Pavlovian trigger is firing. Which one are you?
Well, I don't know about that, Todd. I know that deadlines are stern teachers, and they make you find things to write about. They teach you how to keep things shorter, at least when it's combined with a space limitation. Look, you do it enough, it's like anything else. It's practice.
And it becomes habit. And the format, I would think, of doing a column becomes a habit as well.
Yeah, I got 700 words typically to write to fill a predetermined space, and it used to be about 560, and now it's 700. I got to be a little more wordy, but fortunately, Connecticut is pretty good about supplying topics that bear on public policy. I mean, not that anybody in Connecticut cares about public policy besides you and a few legislators, but
it's how you package it up. And you do a good job of packaging it so that it hits the nerve of what I think goes to the excitement creation level of where it's violating principles that people have an innate sense of. And talk radio is structured the same way. I feel like there's a basic small number. I've never tried to count what they are, but there's certain triggers that everybody has, and those triggers are tied to principles, and all of the stories I think that we cover are line up with one of those principles if they create any kind of excitement in the response. So for me, I'm always thinking, what principle is this violating? And because people get, I think, spiked up about is when they see an obvious principle being violated. Do you look at it that way?
Well, I think I'm a little more cynical. I think that most politics, most events in politics are hypocritical. And if you can find the hypocrisy, then you've got something to write about. And it's the rare politician who, doesn't waive the rules, when there's an opportunity to serve his own advantage.
Well, I think that's kind of the same thing, because the hypocrisy is the violation of a principle. You should be honest, You should be consistent. You should be values driven. I mean, isn't that the fundamentals of?
Yeah, I'll go along with that. Yeah. Okay.
But people, because people are always saying to me, oh, they're so hypocritical. I say hypocrisy is the mother's milk of politics. You're not saying anything about a politician when you're saying he's a hypocrite. You're just, it's another way of saying he's a living, breathing political figure.
Yeah, but you know, the problem is that lots of people don't follow politics and government closely enough to realize the hypocrisy all around them. They don't really give it a second thought. And I understand that they got busy lives and times are hard for many people now.
Well, let's not forget that those who we hire to run our business of government for us, as soon as they get into the position of being in charge, they start telling us stories about what's going on in order to not offend certain groups of voters who they want to hold close. So they choose their words carefully and they make innocuous statements and they try to weave a reality that avoids ever saying what's actually going on or overtly telling us something that's false and deliberately leading us down the wrong path intellectually so that we come to have no voice except voices like yours, where in 700 words, you can lay things out pretty clearly. Like I worry about if you had 1200 words, you would lose your the edge and the clarity that you have.
Well, the one thing you learn in this business is the longer you write, the more audience you lose. So there's one great writer who wrote to somebody someday. I'd have to look up and see who it was. He wrote that I would have written shorter, but I didn't have time.
Yes. What a great statement that is. All right. So UConn. You have anything you want to say about UConn? What's going on with the sports department? What's going on with the management? I have this philosophical problem with the idea of a state running, owning and operating a university, because I see state governments as being these vessels of squandered assets, where the people's assets are treated as something that's really monopoly money that you use to influence voter behavior with. And if you can create huge piles of money through which thousands of people can make their living, that you've created the best vessel for controlling elections. And that's what all of our politicians are and our political parties are running around trying to do, is to solidify those flows of money so that they have a certain electorate locked up.
Yeah, well, I'll agree that Connecticut now is on the brink of really not being able to have a private economy because the government class, and by that I mean not just government employees, but government contractors and agencies that do government social service work. That part of the population is really just so big as to be really decisive in our elections now. Mm-hmm. I also think that these days higher education is probably at least 50% just overhead on the economy. There's a lot of nonsense and indoctrination to it. However, in fairness, I have my own experience. I went to UConn many years ago for 5 or 6 years off and on as I was, working and going to school or working and going to school. And while I did not graduate, I dropped out a semester short. I got out of UConn, a little bit of an education, particularly two history courses that have meant the world to me, with two outstanding professors who I think, thank God, are still alive. And those two history courses to me were worth 5 years of bouncing in and out of UConn. I mean, there was a lot of mediocrity in the rest of the time I was there, and I was part of it. But I found there, there's an English course, a poetry course I had there too. Some great things that meant, just huge amount of you know, meaning to my life. And I'm very grateful to UConn. And the key thing for me was, you know, I most of the time I was living off campus and I did not pay hardly a cent for tuition. You know, I was a commuting student. You know, now we didn't back then have the, you know, the beautiful dorms and cafeterias and great meal plans. I mean, the place was pretty shoddy back then. But nevertheless, you know, that taught me that even in the shoddiest old building, if you had a great professor who was, you know, teaching great material that interested you, it didn't matter how shoddy the facilities were. You know, my father was in higher education, and I still have some hopes for it. But, you know, today it's way too big. It's way too bloated. It's way too irrelevant. And in UConn's case, you know, right now, the university is paying really the equivalent of three presidential salaries.
All right, hold that thought, Chris. Let's take a quick break because I think you're going in just the right direction. Chris Powell is here from the Journal Inquirer. More coming up in just a moment on WTIC.
Miss something from the Todd Feinberg Show? Listen to the podcast on WTIC.com/podcast.
Talking to Chris Powell, Journal Inquirer, a great observer of things going on in government in the state of Connecticut and larger issues. And I think you've gone into a direction that I love talking about, so I want to cultivate this a little bit, and that is the idea that the structure that worked 5 or 10 years ago when you were going to college.
5 or 10? More like 50 times.
Well, even better, then we have a larger scope of history to look at. That the thing that was good has been turned into the thing that we lament, and that is government expansion for the sake of those who manage it and need to win elections. And expansion means more of those people dependent on the state dollars, which means a political party is benefiting from the flow of those dollars. And my observation about politics now is that virtually all policy is made for the purpose of directing money to your voters or to mitigate a risk of losing voters by cutting the budget. So a Republican isn't going to come into office and recommend trimming down UConn's budget and creating all kinds of transparency. Too big of a fight to have. That's too solidified a special interest group. A Republican isn't going to come into office and say, we've got to do something about the rules for unions, and we got to make it easier to fire teachers. Too many votes would be lost. Too much negative reaction would be provoked. And therefore, these special interest groups that are government created and government funded become permanent and unchangeable. And tie that into the UConn discussion of how it was, 15 or 20 years ago when you were there compared to now.
Yeah, add a few more decades to that, would you, Todd? Right now, I mean, UConn is, I think, very inefficiently run. It has been for many years. You know, they make sweetheart deals with their executives. So now, UConn essentially has three people making presidential salaries above $300,000 a year. They have the current president, who is an interim president, Andrew Agwunobi, who was head of the UConn Health Center. He has succeeded Tom Katsalaeus, who was there, I guess, barely 2 years before the Board of Trustees decided they didn't like the guy after they, you know, hired him and brought him up from, I guess, for Virginia. Katsalaeus had the provision in his contract that if he lost the presidential job, he could become a tenured professor at the salary of the highest paid professor in the university. So, you know, I guess he's gone from a salary of $600,000 or $700,000 down to one of something like $339,000. And his predecessor, Susan Herbst, who was there for about 10 years, she had the same provision in her contract, and Now, you know, she's teaching at the Stanford campus and making more than $330,000 a year. And I think Agwunobi, the new president, is was already making that kind of money out at the UConn Health Center. You know, is this really necessary? I mean, are there good people in the world who might teach or administer at UConn for, you know, less than $300,000 a year? I mean, even the governor in Connecticut, you know, is paid only $150,000 a year. Of course, he gets a free house in Hartford for it, but it's all too big and bloated, and they're all running around calling each other doctor. And now UConn is, you know, something like $40,000 a year for the typical student. You know, and it may be a value compared to what higher education is in the rest of the country, but I think it's self-serving bloat right now.
Well, it may be a value to the student who's getting a huge discount off going to a private university, but that doesn't mean it's a value to the taxpayer. And it doesn't mean that there might not be better ways to get from here to there than having this huge budget, tens of millions of dollars of losses in things like the health portion of the operation, and the bloated salaries, or the unmanageability of it all, the flow of cash that's just guaranteed to happen every year without public scrutiny.
Well, and the value to students is not so great now, Todd. You know, we've got a huge student debt problem in the yes. country. We've got all sorts of kids coming out of college with student debt, and they can't get a job that's capable of giving them a normal life and paying off the debt. You know, the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, I think, did a study 4 or 5 years ago about the number of retail clerks and taxi drivers who had college degrees and college debt. We tell people that they need a college degree, and that all these, you know, college graduates make more money, and maybe on average they do, but I don't think earning money is the only point of going to college. One point of going to college is to gain some appreciation of life and history and culture. But you know, we're telling people they've got to do it to make a living, and it's a lie, you know, because millions are coming out with debt and they can't make a normal living. And so they put off family formation. They put off getting a home. College is overrated.
Well, it certainly is. And it's overrated by the power structure, which has invested all this money into it, driven up demand, and both culturally by saying you have to be college educated over the past 50 years or so since you and I went to college, I guess, but also by funneling so much money into it that it drives up the cost and increases the number of students wanting to go. So we've trained our whole civilization that you have to go to college, and people have been naive enough to be willing to take out second mortgages on their homes or take out student loan debt, and created now a crisis of student loan debt, as you pointed out, all in service of this fantasy pushed by the political class, among others, which benefits from it, but is bankrupting the nation.
Yeah, well, the education class is highly responsible for it too, Todd. Education in America costs far too much. I mean, you look at Connecticut's test scores. I mean, we've been putting more money into public education in Connecticut in 40 years since, the Horton versus Meskel decision back in, I think, 77. But you don't see the results in learning among the kids. I mean, the scores are stagnant or sometimes going down. This is a racket that tells people that basically that you've got to have very highly paid teachers and administrators, and they need the money, but it doesn't produce results with the kids. And yet why do we continue with this false premise that learning is a matter of school spending? We do it because now we've got such a big class of dependents on the getting salaries out of the educational system. And as you were saying, we can't cut it because there's too many of them. They're too influential politically.
Yes, which means we live in a society in which people are going to work and paying huge taxes in some states like Connecticut every day in order to sustain a rigged political system that serves the interests of those who hold elective office and run bureaucracies and all that flow of cash that you were alluding to, rather than the best interests of the state and the people who reside there. And
you know, in Connecticut, we even have a law that forbids municipalities from reducing their school appropriations, even as enrollment declines.
Yes.
Enrollment is declining in Connecticut. Now, the only purpose of that law is to make sure that if a school system has any financial savings, it has to immediately turn them over to the teachers union.
Chris Powell, thank you, sir. Always great to talk with you.
Thank you, Todd.
Let's get a news update. Then we got more conversation coming your way on WTIC.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela is the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Todd Feinberg, now 2 till 6 on WTIC News Talk 1080.
Good afternoon. Hello there. Listen to this. One of the fun things about podcasts is people talk more casually, like Chuck Todd, who is the big political star of NBC News and the host of Meet the Press. He does this podcast that they distribute, the Chuck Toddcast, in which he gets to speak honestly about who he is. And the whole idea of journalism goes out the window. It's wonderful. The pretense. Listen to him chatting over the last few days with George Will, the longtime conservative pundit and columnist. Listen to this.
But how does Trumpism get defeated if you don't fight it?
Well, first, maybe it goes away.
So there's the premise right off the bat. Like, where is Chuck coming from? How do you defeat Trumpism? He talks about it all the time. He's obsessed with, well, it's one of his obsessions.
But how does Trumpism get defeated if you don't fight it?
Well, first, maybe he goes away. You know, the old story about the farmer who was trying to sell his mule, and he says, this is a good mule. And to show this, he picked up a 2x4 and hit the mule across the snout. And he says, you just have to hit him across the snout with a 2x4 to get his attention. Well, maybe the Republican Party needs hit across the snout with a 2x4 to get its attention with another defeat.
All right. So there won't be change, says George Will, until Republicans start to lose. And as soon as they start to lose, he seems to be saying, that Trump will be forgotten about. He will be put into the rearview mirror. Trump will be over as soon as they suspect that Trump is not essential to victory. What are your thoughts on that? 860-529-842. I want to add that into the mix over the next hour or so as we talk. Don't forget the rant line, 751-4698. We do the rants in about an hour and a half. We have Abby calling from Ellington. Hi, Abby.
Hi, how are you?
Hello, Abby.
Hi. I just wanted to talk about the mayor of San Francisco. Her recent telephone conference she had regarding being unmasked on a venue, and how she didn't seem to take ownership of the issues that the questions that were coming up. It's just a double-sided, or just the goal that she had. That was it. I'm just shocked.
Tell us specifically what was it that that Mayor Breed did that you didn't like.
So apparently she went to a concert over the weekend, and it was noted that she didn't have a mask. She was drinking and eating and enjoying a concert. And when the media asked her about what they saw, she said, how dare you ask about this? You should be congratulating us for having a concert and enjoying this band coming together. And I had a good time with my friends. And I was like, are you asking the question? Are you trying to avoid the question? I just never seen anything like that before in my life. It was crazy.
Well, so I interpreted her remarks. I thought what she was saying was, hey, leave us alone with the masks. We're out there having fun. This is what humans do. Was that not what she was saying?
Well, she has a mandate for people to wear masks in San Francisco. So
yeah, well, that's what's confusing about her, but I loved what she was saying because she was saying the right thing.
But then why would you make a 3-year-old wear a mask? Is it do as I say, not as I do?
Yeah, I don't know the I've got to go back and look and see how long that's been in effect and stuff like that. I haven't studied up on it, but I hear the sound bite this morning, and I thought, this is great.
I really did. I just don't like the double standard of her telling everybody else to wear a mask, and yet it's okay for her not to.
So you were looking at hypocrisy. Anthony, can you pull that sound of Mayor Breed from San Francisco? She was talking over the weekend about being at a concert and how people were questioning her hypocrisy. And she was saying, you know what? Humans do. We're not going to sit at restaurants and eat a few bites and then put the mask back on and then take it off and eat a few more bites. And we aren't going to take the mask off or put the mask on to listen to music. And then somebody hands us something to chew on and we take it off again. That's not. Essentially, she was saying that's inhumane, I think, and don't be ridiculous.
I applaud her. I really do. Just don't like the hypocrisy of mandating everybody else to wear a mask, and yet she's okay. She's telling people to wear a mask. It's okay for her not to. That was it.
All right. We'll look into it further, Abby. Appreciate you bringing it up. 860-522-9842. I hope more political figures start talking like her. Mayor London Breed in San Francisco. Mark in Watertown, hi, you're on WTIC.
Yes, good afternoon. Can I speak a little bit about college?
Sure, are you planning on attending?
It took me 19 years to get my bachelor's degree, and I'm proud of that. And I want to know, in your pursuit of happiness, you do not need a college education. But is there anything
that is for
wrong?
Sure.
Is there anything wrong in going to college and getting an education?
Not that I've heard of.
Right. Well, when you were talking about college, some of the things I didn't agree with, but I know...
Like
that,
what?
Well, I know that if I didn't go to college, I wouldn't know half the stuff I know now. And there's nothing wrong with that. And I had a job, a blue-collar job. I made $28.10 an hour in 2010, and I didn't go to college to improve myself in a job. I went to college to learn something.
Yeah, well, that's great. I wasn't addressing that people shouldn't go to college. I was addressing that people shouldn't be forced or culturally coerced to go to college.
Correct.
and that the government shouldn't be in partnership with the colleges, driving up the demand for colleges, driving up the cost, then going to the cheap loan business to hook people on debt in order to go to something that may or may not be advantageous for them. That's all.
Well, the unions with between the teachers and the state of Connecticut, why does the state of Connecticut bargain collectively in a way that harms the state?
Well, because their goal is not to do what's in the best interest of the state, but to win elections. So the purpose of public sector unions is to be able to control the outcome of elections by having lots of people who are making more money because you are elected than they would otherwise. And unions are a mechanism for overpaying people so that they will vote for you.
Well, I belong to the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers, and we're the most democratic union in the country. And I think
Does that mean? What makes you the most democratic union in the country?
Because any position in the union is up for election. You got to run for it. If it's business agent or shop committee or negotiator or steward, any position, they have elections and you have to run for it.
Good.
Yeah, it works out pretty good. Except, you know, the unions are very liberal, and I don't mind that because I'm willing to take a liberal stand if it's good. But basically, I'm conservative, and I vote Republican all the time.
But, well, so tell us a good liberal stand.
That you make enough money that you can earn a decent living, and that you have benefits like health and dental. And, you know, when I first started working at United Technologies, I had a little card. I could give it to the people in the hospital and not say a word. Everything was taken care of. Now, like, the unions kind of hurt themselves with Obamacare because it turned around and kicked them in the butt. And the unions should not want to control the country. They should bargain collectively with the companies they're with. They shouldn't try to control the country. That's wrong.
Mark, it's nice to hear from you. You raised some interesting issues. Thank you for the phone call. The thing that stands out to me the most is that you express a respect for democratic values. That is, that the people of the country, people in general, should be the ones controlling the systems of power. And so you like that about the union, that they let the people decide who has influence in the unions. But the trouble for me is that the purpose of unions, what they do structurally to our society, is anti-democratic. That is, they take power that does not belong to the government, and the government assigns it to a special interest group so that the government can't be blamed for what that third party special interest group does. And yet the government has made the laws that control it. So those unions can behave in anti-democratic ways because that's their job. Their job is to help Democrats rig elections. That's why unions exist. So you have this special interest group called a union that fights for things. I don't know why I use that language. That's their language, and I don't have any respect for that language, but it's just habit from having heard it so much. They manipulate behind the scenes in anti-democratic ways, build alliances with a political party in order that they can get themselves to be overpaid in the way that you describe. So I respect that you like the idea that you could have a job where you got things like health insurance. The trouble is you were able to do that because of an anti-democratic mechanism that coerced the state to funnel resources to you that you would not have gotten through democratic means, through your hard labor alone, competing fairly against others. It was because you belonged to this secret society that you were able to get that benefit. So I'm not blaming you for it. What upsets me is that we have these anti-democratic mechanisms created by special interest groups known as political parties, so that that political party in particular, the Democrats, could use it to build a scheme through which they could deny us the ability to have free and fair elections, which they have done. All of the corruption of our electoral system that upsets us today comes from unions, because Democrats don't try to satisfy voters. They don't try to do what's best for voters in general. They don't try to do what's best for the state in general. They do what's best for unions. So when police unions can't police their own bad cops, won't police their own bad cops, that's because of unions. When schools offer the worst education in the worst neighborhoods, where the education is most badly needed, the bad schools don't get shut down, the bad teachers don't get disciplined or fired. That's because of unions. That's special interest rigging of the system. And Democrats wouldn't be able to win elections if they couldn't build these special interest groups up to a high level of loyalty. They wouldn't win elections if they could not, if they were not using tax dollars from hardworking people to pay off these special interest groups they've created, to keep those special interest groups loyal, giving money and votes and workers for elections and power to the Democratic Party. And so, yeah, I'm with you on wanting democratic values, and unions are part of an anti-dem, an attack on the idea of one man, one vote, of fairness in our society. And as so many of the problems that we have, bad education, bad policing, and the cost of government and people being elected who don't represent American values, that all has its roots in unions. 860-522-9842. Quick break. We'll talk more coming up on WTIC.
Miss something from the Todd Feinberg Show? Listen to the podcast on WTIC.com/podcast.
WTIC, 860-522-9842, Paul in Waterbury. Hi, Paul.
Yes, hello, Todd. I want you to do me a favor, Todd. When we end the conversation, just say goodbye, Paul, so that I know we're done. Because a lot of times when I talk to you, I have no idea the conversation's over, and I keep talking. But I want to talk about unions. And I really enjoy your show and what you talk about and your considered thought on various things politically, which I think is good. However, I don't agree with your attitude on unions. I'm a healthcare worker, and I work for the state of Connecticut, and I know you're kind of.
But I've laid out for you is a very specific problem with unions. So I don't really oppose unions. I oppose the way they are constructed, so that they are able to be used to control our elections. And that's my specific problem. I don't mind if workers want to organize to advocate as a group. I mind that there's a special set of rules that help them rig elections and damage our democracy and bankrupt the state of Connecticut.
You know, let me just say this. I was just in Walmart, and I asked the worker there I asked if they got any extra pay during COVID, okay? They have gotten nothing at Walmart. I asked the same question of a worker at ShopRite. they have gotten no extra pay whatsoever being on the firing line, being out here, being exposed to COVID. I think this is another topic entirely, but I think it's disgusting. The corporate greed in this country.
Why is that greed?
Oh, they should have been, these workers should have gotten bonuses. Are you kidding? Todd, they're out on the firing line making $13, $14 an hour. And the companies are rolling in their profits and their profit margins and their stock options and everything else. It's horrific that these people are not being paid extra money.
So you don't believe in market-driven systems and freedom and the pursuit of happiness and all that stuff?
That's not the point. The point is...
Well, I think that's exactly the point. Paul, I would love to continue the conversation with you after news if you can hang around, because I really want to flesh this out.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.